From Jeffersonville to Latrobe, Katanning to Middletown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it will be known as Keystone Saves, an automatic retirement program for workers whose employer does not offer one. State Representative Tracy Pennycook joins us to explain how it will work. Pennsylvania continues to lag the nation in the percentage of our population actively employed in the workforce. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And it has been 3 years since the First Step Act became law. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on the impact of criminal justice reforms. I'm Loman Henry. Happy New Year, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Tracy Pennycook in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has vetoed a bill passed by the General Assembly that would have given parents the right to know what their children are being taught in school. The legislation, sponsored by State Representative Andrew Lewis of Dauphin County, was prompted by an outcry from parents who got a glimpse of the public school curriculum during COVID-19 school shutdowns and didn't really like what they saw. The proposed new law would have opened what is being taught in public schools to parents. Governor Wolf vetoed the effort at transparency, bowing to pressure from state teacher unions. Lewis responded to the governor's veto, saying, quote, "Somehow, it is now dangerous and harmful for parents to find out what their kids are going to be learning in school the next school year. That is unacceptable and egregious," end quote. In an unusual loss for the Wolf administration, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled in December that the Department of Health's mandate requiring school students to wear masks was unconstitutional. The justices ruled unanimously against the mandate, and in a recently released opinion, they explained that such orders cannot be issued without an emergency declaration by the governor being in place. The justices further said efforts by the administration to claim power to implement mask mandates based on existing law violated the legislative intent of those laws. In May of last year, voters passed 2 state constitutional amendments limiting the power of the governor to make emergency declarations after Wolf had abused those powers during the COVID-19 pandemic. The race for the Republican nomination to succeed retiring U.S. Senator Pat Toomey appears to be about to grow larger. Over the holidays, David McCormick, who is CEO of one of the world's largest hedge funds, ran television ads emphasizing his Pennsylvania roots in an introductory ad featuring his family's Christmas tree farming history. McCormick, who lived in Washington County and Bloomsburg, has more recently been a resident of Connecticut, but he has a stellar resume, including service in the George W. Bush administration and an impressive military career. McCormick would become the second candidate to move into Pennsylvania to run for the seat. Celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz jumped into the race in early December. The field became wide open when Trump-endorsed candidate Sean Parnell withdrew after losing a messy child custody battle with his ex-wife. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Many Pennsylvanians are not saving for retirement because their employer does not offer a retirement savings plan. State Representative Tracy Pennycook of Montgomery County is joining forces with State Treasurer Stacy Garrity to establish Keystone Saves. It would be an automatic IRA program administered by the state to help workers save for retirement. Representative Pennycook joins us now to provide details. Tracy, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Tracy, we're going to talk about Keystone Saves. Before we get into the details of the program, what is the nature of the problem or the challenge that this program is looking to approach?
So unfortunately, most people do not save enough for retirement. And while everyone has that opportunity, it's a little overwhelming for the average person to figure out, do I do a Roth IRA? Do I do a traditional IRA? How do I even start saving for retirement? And so, unfortunately, people get to retirement age and haven't saved enough to live comfortably in retirement, thinking that Social Security will be enough to, you know, maintain your standard of living isn't accurate. So there's this huge gap between standard of living that you're used to and what you've saved for retirement.
There is a new program that you are proposing. It has the support of the state treasurer, Stacey Garrity. These are known as AUTO, A-U-T-O, and as in automatic, not automobile, automatic IRAs. And this program is going to be called Keystone Saves. Tell us about this program that you are looking to implement, and I understand you have bipartisan support for it.
I do have bipartisan support, which I think is really important that both sides of the aisle recognize that we have this problem in Pennsylvania of a shortage of retirement savings. And what this program does is it allows an employee to have money taken out of their weekly or biweekly paycheck and put directly into an IRA. And that sounds kind of simplistic, but if you're not seeing it in your paycheck, you're not missing it, kind of out of sight, out of mind thought process. And this is for the small businesses that have four or more full-time employees. And it's a platform that the treasurer will be managing. And it literally becomes almost so easy to do. I was able to watch someone enroll three fake employees into the system and then allocate their portion of their paycheck. And it was all done in less than 5 minutes. Very, very easy to use. The employee has all the control. He or she can decide how much to put in, stop and start, withdraw money, or opt out altogether. And there'll be a range of different products that are available to that person depending on what period of their life they are in. If they're early investors in their early 20s, then they can carry a little bit more risk in their investment because they have a longer term to let that money grow. So it's intended to get people kind of on the bandwagon of saving for retirement, but also there's an education piece to it where they're going to learn and they're going to be in control of their own fund, and hopefully they'll become more financially literate, be able to make more investment opportunities for themselves, more savings, maybe branch out into a money market account or whatever. But we're just hoping that this gives the average small business employee an opportunity to start saving for retirement.
What role does the business play in this, Tracy? Does the business have to set it up and manage it, or would that be handled by the state treasurer?
The quick answer to your question is no. The employer has very little to do except for getting them enrolled in the program online and then allocating so much of their pay and either do an electronic transfer every pay period or writing a check every pay period. That's it. The employee is in complete control of their own account.
We do have some experience with something similar to this in Pennsylvania, the 529 College Savings Plan. So in many ways, is this going to operate somewhat similar to that, where once the employee is enrolled in this, and since it's an auto IRA, I guess it also raises the question, once the law is passed, will employees automatically be included in it, or will they have to go to their employer or to the Treasury Department to do that?
No, what will happen is we're going to have a phase-in period. So the businesses that have the most employees are often in an automated payroll and human resources system. So they'll be the first ones that jump on the bandwagon and enroll their employees. And then we'll go smaller and smaller. If you have four or less full-time employees, you're exempt from the program unless you'd like to opt in. But I see it to be very, very simple, 5-10 minutes of initial enrollment, and then everything is on the employee to manage and to make decisions on their fund, add, increase, or decrease. So there's very little, except for the initial startup, that the employer is going to have to do.
We are talking with State Representative Tracy Pennycook about the proposed Keystone Saves program. It is an automatic IRA. And Tracy, as we look at this program, does it have the potential down the road to bring about some cost savings for taxpayers? Because if people were saving more on their own, does this reduce its reliance on state social services down the road?
It absolutely does. The numbers look to be about $14 billion in savings if we can get people to save more for their own retirement and rely less on state programs. And that's significant. Our population in Pennsylvania is older, and most people don't want to rely on the state because that increases taxes, that increases debt. There's all kinds of issues with that. So if we can get people to save for their own retirement, then they also have the confidence to know that they can take care of themselves in retirement and not be dependent on programs through the state that may or may not be funded, depending on what the economic outlook looks like.
I know the Pew Charitable Trust has done a tremendous amount of research into this particular issue. Tracy, have we actually seen an increase or a decrease in savings rates over that period of time because of the pandemic?
We've actually seen a decrease in the savings rates over during the pandemic. And I think right now with the inflation the way it is, as well as the inability to get employees, I think we're in a very tough situation, and I think we need to be a lot more fiscally conservative, and I think we need to, you know, kind of plan for the rainy day, because I think the rainy day is coming.
This program, proposed program, Keystone Saves, it's legislation that you and Representative Michael Driscoll have been introducing or have introduced. Where do we stand in the process, and what sort of legislative hoops do you now have to jump through in order to make this an actuality?
So we have the co-sponsorship memo is out. I believe we're up to like 50 co-sponsors on the co-sponsorship memo. It will be introduced after the holidays, probably the beginning of January. And at that point, it'll be assigned to a committee, and the committee will take it up. And then once it clears committee, it comes to the House floor for the vote. And hopefully we'll get that done relatively quickly. And then on to the Senate it goes.
The program is called Keystone Saves. We are talking with prime sponsor of legislation to set up this program, State Representative Tracy Pennycook, who represents the 147th Legislative District, Montgomery County in southeastern Pennsylvania. And Tracy, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about the proposed Keystone Saves program and or find out more about your legislation, where can they go on the web to get that information?
That would be on RepresentativeTracyPennycook.com. And then I'm also on Facebook, PA State Rep Tracy Pennycook.
Again, we have been talking with State Representative Tracy Pennycook. Tracy, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much.
The number of Americans working dropped significantly during the COVID-19 pandemic. And while much of the nation has recovered, Pennsylvania continues to lag behind in terms of the percentage of the population engaged in the workforce. Here to look at the numbers are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi with this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the executive director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Let's talk about a recent policy brief that deals with the state's labor market. Mm-hmm. You wrote a policy brief that's available at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, that looks at the most recent data for what you refer to as the non-seasonally adjusted household job data, and you describe it as less than rosy. Can you give our listeners?
Yes. Yes, I can. Our listeners deserve less than rosy. The Bureau of Labor Statistics at the national level collects data to sites. They do one called the Household Survey, where they call a certain number of households in each state, metro area. It's there, and they ask the question, were you employed or not? If not, why not? And trying to get an idea as to how many households have people working and how many are in the labor force and how many are unemployed. Then there's the employer survey. And typically we deal with the employer survey, which is a look at payrolls across a state or across a metro. And we think that tends to be a more accurate number looking at payrolls. However, this time we do look at the household survey because the question that was really on my mind is, what about the labor force? And for those not familiar with the term labor force, anyone age 16 and over, not in the military, that are either working or, if they're not working, are actively looking for work. And that's a big key, because if you're not actively looking for work, let's say you're retired or you're in school, then you're just not part of the labor force because you don't want to be, and that's okay. This notion of, you know, here we are X number of months into this pandemic, heck, X number of years into this pandemic, and you hear these stories about businesses having a hard time finding employees to work. And so the question pops into my mind is, well, what about the labor force? And the household data is the only one that accurately goes after that data point of labor force. And so, like you said when you started, we noticed that at the end of the year, which the most recent data available is October of 2021, the number of those claiming to be employed in the household was only 5.96 million. And that was the lowest reading, those non-2020 COVID reading, since 2013, 5.95. That was our lowest October. And so, you know, you did notice that the number of people claiming to be employed has fallen quite dramatically. Now, we did this thing where we looked at the COVID year of 2020, and in that COVID year, it was actually down fairly significantly. But when we looked at 2020, it was 5.88 million, which was the lowest monthly average since 2010 of 5.84 million. So we asked the question, what if it had grown from 2019 1%, which was our normal growth? You know, in Pennsylvania, we typically don't grow too fast. And if that would have happened and we'd have grown at 1%, 2020, excuse me, we'd have been at 6.33 million. In 2019, we had our best year in a long, long time. In 2019, the average monthly number of people employed was 6.26 million. And in October, 5.96. So you can see where it slid dramatically. So let's say that you would have had that 1% increase in 2020 and another 1% increase in 2021. We'd have had 6.33 million people employed to 6.39. You would have had 430,000 more jobs today had COVID not taken place. Now, I know COVID did take place and we have to deal with it. So we're saying that we're still short about 51,000 people versus what we should have been. And it's still down. But the question then comes up, how does this all compare with the national? And the national has only slid back to the 2016 level, where we slid back to the 2010 level. So the national did not slide back as far. It did have a little bit of drop. And a lot of it has to do with, there are states out there that are doing quite well for themselves.
What did you find specifically about the labor force in Pennsylvania? You had made mention of who comprises the labor force, but you're looking at these trends longer over time. Mm-hmm. What did you find that was interesting in the October 2021 data?
Right. Well, again, we noticed the best year for the labor force was 2019, when you had 6.55 million people in the labor force. And again, saying that they're either employed or unemployed and looking for work. It dropped like 3.5% to 2020, and then another 0.76% by October 2021. So you saw that this has really slid for the last couple of years. And we even went back to 1990. And to get a better idea of what's going on since 1990, Pennsylvania's labor force has only grown 8% since 1990. Most of the time it's grown, but it's grown by about 1%. You know, we just don't have big growth. Compared to the nation, since 1990, the national labor force has grown by 28%. Pennsylvania 8%, nation 28%. We're seeing just not a lot of folks coming into that labor force for whatever reason. And I know COVID's part of it, but this is a long-going trend, 30 years in the making. On top of that, we want to look at the labor force participation rate. And that is the number of people in the labor force as a percentage of the non-institutionalized population 16 years and over. And what we're seeing so far is that the monthly average labor force participation rate in Pennsylvania is 61.2%. So that is 61.2% of our population 16 years and over are in the labor force. And again, that is the lowest rate in the last 30 years. You have to go back to 2014, 2018, it was 62.7. We had a 30-year high of 65.1 in 2008. You just have not had a labor force participation rate that's been growing. Nationally, same thing. You want to compare it. The labor force has been higher than Pennsylvania's over the last 30 years, but there were some falling in the national labor force. So what we don't know, and I think what really anybody doesn't know, is why. Why aren't people in the labor force like they used to be? But what we can tell you is that in order for this economy to grow, people need to get back in the labor force and need to start looking for jobs and getting jobs. And of course, this was reinforced by the Keystone Business Climate Survey, which the Lincoln Institute has, does twice a year. And when they ask their participants about the ability to find workers, they all say the same thing, that there's plenty of jobs to be available, but they're having difficulty finding qualified individuals in which to employ them. And they've tried things like increasing wages, increasing benefits, or increasing both. So you've got businesses out there actively trying to get people in. People just aren't coming. And that really becomes an issue going forward. And as a result, in this survey, a lot of firms were not so optimistic about what's going to happen 6 months into the future, that they think this is going to continue for quite a while.
Your brief concludes with your recommendation for what you think Pennsylvania should do to become a business-friendly state. What is that recommendation? Can you explain it to our listeners?
Absolutely. We've said for years that Pennsylvania is just not a business-friendly environment. It's been very beholden to the unions and has done a lot to satisfy union demands versus the business demands. And one of the things that we recommend is Pennsylvania adopt a right-to-work law. And what a right-to-work law says is unionization is no longer compulsory. It means that if you walk into a factory and they're unionized, you don't have to join if you don't want to. Right now, if the plant is unionized, you have to belong to the union. You have to pay dues. Now, there is a thing called fair share where you pay dues, but not the political portion of the dues. But either way, you're forced to pay for this. And we think that if you made it optional, you might see a changing in the environment. You may, if nothing else, see a signal to businesses that they're welcome in this state. And we see, and we did this policy brief this past year, and we've done it almost every year since, where non-right-to-work states typically do not grow as fast as right-to-work states. Right-to-work states are more business-friendly, and that's what keeps the nation humming and Pennsylvania lagging behind.
Frank, great stuff as always, and we encourage our listeners to visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Major reforms were contained within the First Step Act, which became law 3 years ago. For an update on its impact, we turn to Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania for this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As we flip our calendars to the new year, we realize we've passed the midway point of the 2021-2022 legislative session. We can look forward to starting anew and resetting, whether that be applied to resolutions, relationships, or simply recharging. And fortunately, for those Pennsylvanians seeking restoration, it's on the move in the form of continued implementation of the Federal First Step Act and in the form of state action as it relates to probation reform and broader clean slate application. This year, we celebrate 3 years of the Federal First Step Act becoming law on December 21st, 2018. It was the most significant reform to the federal criminal justice system enacted in a decade. The FSA aimed to ensure proportional punishment, enhance family support, and provide additional opportunities for individuals to restore their lives. The FSA transformed the U.S. criminal justice system by focusing on 18 key reforms across 4 focus areas. First, improving sentencing rules. These efforts included limiting mandatory minimum sentences, expanding compassionate release, and allowing more offenders to earn sentence reductions by completing programs to lessen their likelihood of recidivism. Second, addressing poor prison conditions. The FSA prohibits restraint of pregnant women, bans solitary confinement for minor children, and requires the Bureau of Prisons to place individuals as close to family as possible. Third, helping more people earn second chances. The FSA requires the BOP to identify best practices to reduce recidivism and partner with nonprofit organizations and educators to provide programs to help individuals learn the skills they need to flourish post-incarceration. And fourth, enhancing accountability and transparency. These efforts included requiring the U.S. Attorney General to create and consult with an independent review commission to improve the criminal justice system. The AG also must report on implementation progress each year. 15 of the 18 key reforms are fully implemented or are in the process of being implemented. And while it's ongoing, the law already has helped thousands of people take the first step toward their second chance. The FSA and programs implemented due to COVID-19 have reduced the federal prison population by 24,000 people, or 13%. And only 11% of individuals released as a result of FSA reforms have returned to federal prison or been rearrested. The average 8-year recidivism rate is 49%. The FSA has inspired countless reforms in state criminal justice systems. In Harrisburg, the Senate just recently passed probation reform, Senate Bill 913, which will remove redundancies in the probation system to make the government's process more efficient. It will allow individuals to leave the judicial district during their supervision time, shorten the duration of this period, which will reduce the risk of technical violations, and set up a process for review conferences where probation can be ended early should all criteria be met. Passing on a margin of 46-4 this session, and having passed unanimously last session, we urge Chairman Kaufman and the House Judiciary Committee to consider the legislation in short order and send it to the House for a floor vote. Governor Wolf has indicated his support for this reform. Additionally, Representatives Delosier and Harris have once again joined forces to expand clean slate automated sealing for low-level drug felonies. This automated sealing would be applied after 10 years with a crime-free record has elapsed. This will immediately aid in thousands of Pennsylvanians becoming more employable and provide for restorative justice to those who have earned it. Together, these state and federal laws, once signed into law and fully implemented, will help millions of Americans restore their lives and use their own talents to benefit themselves and others. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And with this program, we begin our 27th year of Lincoln Radio Journal, which is heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, WRJV-FM in Breezewood, along with WBXQ-FM in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.